From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham. B-Mac in for a part-timing Brendan Riley. It is a Friday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Kind of a I feel like we're kind of part-time, though, today.
Yeah, Blank, today.
A 75-minute show.
I feel like Brad Kellner all of a sudden. Like, I don't do much work, and I bitch about the work that I do.
Yeah, we're just not doing a whole lot of work today. But we're going to entertain you.
Neither
for
are the Aggies,
minutes.
By the way.
Or my goodness.
Good Lord.
Which, they get ranked, and then they drop two games.
You
I did
told
not
me they were going to be good this year.
I mean, I said that after they got ranked. I mean, they were ranked 24th in the country coming into this tournament, and then they lose yesterday and then they to Murray State, a team who has struggled so far this year, and then they lose to Colorado by 30, a team that lost to Grambling earlier this year. Although Colorado's weird because they lost to Grambling, but they beat nationally
Tennessee.
Ranked Tennessee.
Yeah.
So it's like they're kind of helter-skelter. But I think Buzz will get them figured out. They finished the season strong last year. Buzz is kind of notorious for finishing season strong, so we'll see if that happens again this year. A team that doesn't look very strong here, Blankers, and I hate to bring it up. Packers are toast, aren't they?
Yep,
are they
done? Sure are. They really are. And you know what, Jeremy? I've held out a slight bit of hope just because they beat the Cowboys. Did I mention they beat the Cowboys? They beat the Cowboys. And, you know, but then I started looking at the schedule and going, well, they let a couple of cupcakes get away early. That was going to hurt them anyway. But they got the Eagles this week. Then they've got the Rams and the Dolphins and a really tough finish. I just don't see any way that they're going to dig their way out of this. You know, it started with the fact that GM Brian Gutekunst didn't. Yeah, I understand if you're going to let Devontae Adams get away or you realize he wants to be elsewhere and you trade him. But on the flip side, you still have to get a couple of veteran receivers to fortify your roster. They didn't do that. They relied too heavily on rookies that just haven't gotten acclimated to the league and Rodgers and timing and basically staying healthy. And now Rodgers looks like he doesn't look great, whether it's his thumb or other reasons. And I think you're right. This team is toast.
Yeah, I was one of the kind of backing the Packers a little bit, you know, spending the draft capital to get Christian Watson, who Watson, I mean, he's made some plays the last couple of weeks, although it's taken him way too long, and even the touchdowns, like outside of the touchdowns the last couple of weeks, he's had some drops as well.
Yep.
I'm okay going like rookies, but in hindsight and like watching this Packers case study of how they handle that receiver position, I think that you were right all along. Like, okay, that's fine to have wide receiver two, wide receiver three to be these rookies that could develop, but maybe give them a little bit of veteran help outside of guys like Randall Cobb, who's probably a little bit long in the tooth, outside of Alan Lazard, who's probably not a number one in the NFL.
No, you're absolutely right. And I think, you know, Jeremy, you touched on it a little bit. But, you know, Dobbs showed early on that he could maybe pick some things up, and he was catching the ball a little better. But when you watch Christian Watson, that's why I'm not here to give him his flowers, because for every touchdown he also had a drop that was big where he could have had more. Last night, again, you see him easing up on routes because he anticipates the ball's not coming to him, and then all of a sudden he looks up and has that oblique moment, like the ball's coming, and he's not where he should be. And I think that it's a different animal playing in the NFL, for one thing, but playing for a guy like Rodgers, who is so reliant upon timing and, you know, and running accurate routes. And you can tell they just haven't been on the same page the entire season. Even a guy like Sammy Watkins, who did a lot of kind of recess-type football where he just scrambled around and got open, realizes that in a really, really tight system, you got to be exactly where you're supposed to be. When you're not, it makes both guys look bad, and Rodgers looks terrible right now. At least, thankfully, he admitted it last night.
Yeah, he does look a little banged up. I don't really know what to make of Tennessee. They're running away with this division. They're going to win this division. They're up against the Colts, and they have a 2.5-game lead on the Colts. And I know I'm rooting for the Colts. I just don't think they're going to catch the Titans. I feel like this is the same Titan team really from a year ago. Last year they finished with the best record in the AFC. Like, I think they are the cream of the crop of the AFC South. I think they are a tough team to beat. But I hesitate calling them a true contender in the AFC.
Well, I think, Jeremy, that their offense can drive you to drink, because I think that when you look at it,
no.
You know, you do have Derrick Henry, but when you look at a guy like Ryan Tannehill, it's kind of Jekyll and Hyde. You don't know which Ryan Tannehill you're going to get. Their receivers, after they dumped out on A.J. Brown, you know, their number one pick has been hurt. It's a hodgepodge of receivers. You know, they've got a good offensive line and a good tight end. But overall, you look at it and go, you can load the box and try and stop Derrick Henry. That's probably your best option. But sometimes they can find wrinkles and ways to beat you. Even a jump pass from Henry last night was extremely effective because everybody's first anticipated move on defense is, here comes Derrick Henry.
Yeah, he's calling himself the next Peyton Manning. I see what you did there, though, by the way.
I don't know what you're talking about. I just called it like I saw it.
Yeah, I'm sure you didn't see the mugshot of Todd Downing, the offensive coordinator that got a DUI on the way home. Like, that's kind of – I mean, it's not kind of a bitter ending to the night.
Like, yep.
You get a win on Thursday Night Football. You come away with the victory against Green Bay. You're feeling good about yourselves. You're on your way home. Look, I mean, he was on a flight last night from Green Bay. Where did this dude have drinks, by the way?
On the flight?
Yeah. This dude was at Lambeau winning a football game. He lands in Nashville, and on the way home, he gets busted for a DUI. So, what's happening on those flights? Anyways, this is tough for Vrabel. Like, I mean, Vrabel just picked up a big win. They're running away with the AFC South. They have more wins than anybody else in the AFC. Dolphins 5-2, Kansas City 7-2, Titans now 7-3. And now you got to put up with this. Like, if a player did this, you're looking at suspension.
No,
I don't know how you avoid that with an offensive coordinator. You have to suspend them.
Let's also not forget Andy Reid's son and the fact that this is a horrible look, and there is past precedence in the NFL, and that no matter if you were at the office, on a plane, whatever, as you're leaving work representing the NFL and an NFL team, and you're liquored up, and you're doing just something completely inexcusable in both cases, but in the case of Andy Reid's son, who, you know, basically harmed a child for life, you look at these guys and go, come on, you just have to be more responsible. In a day and age where we have, you know, all the different rideshare services that are out there and even team personnel that can drop you up. I can't tell you how many flights I've been on, and I'm sure you have too, where, you know, a guy says, whether it's car trouble or a lot of different circumstances, can you drop me at my place? I'll leave my car at the airport, get it tomorrow. No problem. But there's got to be a better thinking person somewhere on that flight that says, he looks like he might have had a little too much. We need to probably do something, because the more these stories pop up, the more you're just hoping that someone didn't get seriously hurt.
Yeah, see, this is always kind of like what is tough about a DUI. I'm sure he felt fine to drive. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he was probably fine to drive, and he probably would have made it home easily. Like, most people that drive under the influence make it home. Like, that is the reality of the situation. So it's hard to, one, see somebody do like that's had too much, because a lot of times they haven't had too much. It's just that you're driving under the influence. And secondly, like, this is something that happens over the course of a season for an NFL team. Not to say it happens a lot, but this is the kind of thing that could derail you. And it's like, okay, it's just an assistant coach, right? Yeah, but now it's like drama in the building. Now it's, how many games is he going to miss? Now it's like, you're not really being an adult and responsible whenever your team's in the midst of having a quality season.
Yeah, I've been through a lot with my family and people close to me, to where I just can't do any kind of justifying of someone, like I said, nowadays, where rides are so easy to obtain, that you got to be smarter than that. And especially if you're in a public figure position, like you said, it's one thing you're a public figure. You're a public figure in a team that is playing as well as the Titans are, with all eyes on you on Thursday Night Football, and now you are the distraction that becomes the biggest storyline and the biggest negative, which otherwise would have been a win at Lambeau in the cold later in the season, national TV, winning the division. We've got everything rolling for us right now, and we should be heading towards the playoffs like a steamroller. Now you're going to be, there's going to be a lot of tiptoeing around. There's going to be a lot of, you know, trying to handle the media and then figure out what to do with him. And it's just a distraction the entire organization doesn't need. And you hope it doesn't derail them, because they continually knock on the door and look like, in the regular season, they're a team to be reckoned with. And then when they get to the playoffs, it ends up being a different story. If this is the beginning of the end of another season for the Titans, it's a horrible look for a franchise that's been really going, clicking on all cylinders.
Yeah, I'm going to be watching that situation, see what they do, see if there's any sort of suspension there, see if there's anything.
You think there will be?
Yeah, I mean, maybe they wait for the legal system to play out here, but I don't – I mean, if it was a player's going to get popped, right? Like, they would be subject to the NFL player discipline, whatever it's called, the disciplinary system. Like, why wouldn't an offensive coordinator be?
Well, that's why I'm thinking, do you get out in front of this and say, hey, we're going to suspend him for a game or two, just so that, you know, when you do get closer to the playoffs, you've already said, hey, he's already been suspended, so it's time served, as opposed to, we'll wait it out, innocent until proven guilty. Regardless, it's a bad look that, you know, he should have handled differently. But if you wait too long, now by the time that some kind of a decision comes down, it might be right as you get ready to go to the playoffs, and it might really throw a monkey wrench in everything that you're trying to do.
Yeah, I think you get out ahead of it. I think you try to be proactive about it. Hey, it's kind of like a crude way to talk about it, right? Like, well, we know he's going to be suspended two games. We don't want it to be two games right before the playoffs. Let's just get it out of the way now. But you know these owners and these GMs, and they think that way. You know, if they're going to suspend him two games, pick which two games you want him to be suspended
for. The coaching staff thinks that way. Don't think Vrabel didn't think about this, going, what's my alternative? Who's calling plays if he's not, and for how long? And basically saying, hey, look at your schedule. And just like we know that a lot of times in all the situations I've been in, the general manager waits until you to place the appeal, until you know that it's a couple of games on the schedule you should win anyway, so that you can buy some time and get, you know, it doesn't hurt you later on or in a key situation. You know that Vrabel and everybody has been talking about this since it went down, starting last night when the news broke.
Yeah, not great. Derrick Henry's still a beast, though, by the way. Like we were just talking about them in the AFC playoffs. I don't think the Titans can string together, you know, three wins to go all the way. I really don't. But I wouldn't want to be a team facing off against Derrick Henry when the weather is cool and having to tackle that dude, because that dude is legit.
Think about the top two teams, Kansas City and Buffalo. Think about the fact that both of them should have snow on the ground. Well, the one thing Buffalo that works in any kind of temperature and conditions is a running game. And you know, Mahomes and Josh Allen, though Josh Allen, they both can run and Allen likes to, they really like to sling it around the yard. You know that if it's Tennessee, no matter how much you load the box for that guy, he is massive, he is strong, and he is fully capable of running over you, through you, and around you. And he did it last night. He stiff-armed a 300-pound defensive lineman to the ground last night. Don't tell me in the snow that any team wants to face that freight train coming downhill.
No, absolutely not. Speaking of that snow in Buffalo, I'm so mad that that game got moved. I saw the weather forecast early in the week, and I put down a ticket for the under in that game. Uh-huh. Since they moved it to Detroit, which, as we know, is a dome stadium, the over-under jumped 5.5 points.
Ooh.
So I'm sitting here on this, like, underinflated total number because they decided to move the game. I should be a Karen and ask for my money back.
No, you might be okay. The latest news now is, no matter how much they thought they were forward-thinking and planning for this, that the team hasn't gotten to the airport yet, and they've basically,
oh, really?
They basically had a ruling in the city of Buffalo right now that they want to hold off and halt all travel.
I can understand why. Have you seen some of the pictures?
Yes.
Yeah.
So there is serious concern about if everybody can, one, get to the airport, and even if they do, if they can take off and get to Detroit. So I don't think they're done with this one yet, and I think you might be in luck.
Yeah, they need to make sure that they don't leave Buffalo. I'm worried about the safety of that flight.
Oh, I bet you are. You're worried about your freaking account.
I'm not going to lie about that either. 713-780-ESPN. It's the Killer Bees. 713-780-3776, our HRP listener line. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. The MVP voting came out yesterday. The Cy Young 2 days ago. A couple of things about the MVP voting shows you how dominant the Astros are. And the Cy Young voting, a couple of Astros, I think, should feel disrespected. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN97.5 and ESPN92.5.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
AL MVP voting came out yesterday. No surprise in this one. Aaron Judge is the AL MVP. No surprise at all. Yordan Alvarez finishing third in this. And if you look at some of these Houston Astros blankers, they really fill out the top 20. You had two Astros finish in the top five. Yordan third, Altuve fifth. You had three of them finish in the top 10, Verlander 10th. You had four in the top 15, Tucker 15. And you had six in the top 20, Alex Bregman finishing 19th, Framber Valdez finished 20th. I remember having this conversation. It was either right before camp broke, or either right at the beginning of the season. And we were saying that the Astros have like four dudes that are capable of winning an MVP. We might have been selling it short because Yordan proved us right. Altuve proved us right. Tucker we mentioned in that list, and we mentioned Bregman. They all finished top 20. The two that we didn't mention were the pitchers, Verlander and Framber Valdez.
Yeah, no question about it. I think that the list is expanding, and I don't see any reason why it wouldn't include Javier next year to some degree. Both of those lists should probably have a Christian Javier sighting. You look at this team, and that's why we keep saying it's not going anywhere, because of the fact that the sustainability has just been incredible. And whether Verlander stays or goes, you just have that young crop of pitchers that are under team control that are going to be with this franchise that keep getting better. We've seen the development of a Kyle Tucker as a higher pick, along with a guy that they found as a diamond in the rough in Yordan. And you look across the board and say, if Bregman just keeps doing what he did the second half of the season in the playoffs, there's nothing that says he's slowing down. And maybe, just maybe, and I don't know, because we've had these discussions in the past, a guy like Jose Altuve that understands with the lineup that he has and being in that leadoff spot where he's hitting for pop and, 30 home runs and hitting 300 from where he started this year is just simply amazing for that guy. But he continues to be the best hitting second baseman or one of them in baseball. It's just, I don't think that they get enough respect because they don't have the one single dominant guy that everyone in the nation talks about, like an Aaron Judge and a lot of the top teams. If you go Mookie Betts or Freddie Freeman in L.A. and some of those kind of guys. But Yordan should be that guy. Yeah, obviously, some injuries have slowed him down too, but not enough people still are aware of who he is. Maybe this last postseason will do something. But my goodness, what a stable of talent that they have there that is just worthy of all the recognition in the world.
Obviously, Jose Altuve used to be that guy, and he was very close to that guy this year. I mean, you finished fifth in MVP voting. You're having a great year, and he was fantastic. Jose Altuve's year was incredible. But in terms of the best player on this team, where you would pick one guy to stack up with the rest of baseball, it would be Yordan Alvarez. I think the thing that kind of hurts Yordan from this national stage is sometimes, one, it takes the national stage a long time to kind of come around on a guy, especially if he's not in a favorable market, New York, like Judge, L.A., like Ohtani. And Ohtani's global. Let's be honest. Ohtani's global. And that's fine. And I love Shohei Ohtani. A two-way player, first, two-way player that could be dominant pitching and hitting. I mean, Brooks Kieschnick did it, but Brooks Kieschnick was not very good at either one. Wow. Shohei Ohtani's one of the best hitters in baseball, and he's one of the best pitchers in baseball. So I have no problem with Shohei being the face of baseball. I have no problem with Judge being a face of baseball. If there was an Astro that should be mentioned in that, it's Yordan. And Yordan finished third behind those two guys in MVP voting. The problem is, he's not really all that marketable, if we're being completely honest.
No, it's one of those things where it's like he's the best kept secret in all of baseball. And like I said, I think part of it was when he really got going and there was a good portion of time in the regular season where he was starting to get up a little closer to being the second best player in the American League to Judge, and he was closing the gap, and then he got hurt. And, he gets dinged up and nicked up, and he's not playing in a media market like New York, and so he doesn't get as much attention, especially, with the fact that the Astros ran away with the division, and everybody has to hear about the Yankees every single morning, noon, and night from all the shows that, originate from the Big Apple. That, he's already kind of behind the eight ball. And then if he misses any significant time or there's, bigger stories, and you said Ohtani, look, you got L.A., New York, and then Houston. And Houston, from an exposure standpoint, is always going to be third. And I think that hurts him greatly in terms of what the word should already be in the reputation and marketability of a guy. But hopefully, like I said, I think the big thing, Jeremy, is this last year's postseason, from the Seattle home run to the bomb he hit against the Phillies in the World Series to totally turn that game around. I think that enough people were watching. We saw the TV ratings that they're going to really know now who Yordan Alvarez is, and they're going to expect great things.
Yeah, the Cy Young voting, we didn't get to this yesterday. A lot of people were upset about Fromber finishing fifth in the Cy Young voting. Justin Verlander won it, unanimous, no argument there. We spent all our time talking about, Verlander being back next year or not on yesterday's show. But Verlander finished number one. Cease was second. Manoah was third. Ohtani was fourth. Fromber was fifth. A lot of people were mad that Fromber finished fifth. And if you look at the votes, there's 30 votes, 30 people that vote on this. Fromber got one fourth place vote and 12 fifth place votes. So the most popular spot for Fromber was fifth. I really don't see, and I do think that there was one pitcher who got disrespected for the Astros. I think Fromber fifth was right, actually.
Do you?
Yeah.
I'm not mad about it because, again, I think the pitching equivalent, and you could go with two different guys here, but the pitching equivalent of what we were just talking about with Yordan was Fromber, because, and even Javier to a lesser extent. But again, for those same kind of reasons too, smaller market than the other two guys, than two of the three guys that finished in the top three, with Cease being in Chicago. you know, he gets a ton of attention too. But I think that it was also kind of later in the season when he really went on the finishing touches to the start streak, and everybody started to pay a little bit more attention. I think more people had been talking about Dylan Cease and Manoah for the early part of the season, all the way through the midway point. And then all of a sudden it was like, oh, he's coming on late. But those are the guys I remember for the majority of the season when I was really paying attention. And maybe that swayed a vote here or there. I'm not mad about him finishing fifth, but as you and I talked about on the show, I thought there was a chance if people paid attention to the quality start streak alone that Fromber could climb up to as high as third, I thought, but evidently not.
Yeah, I mean, the quality start streak is great. Like, it's good. But at the same time, a quality start is a 4.5 ERA. So, like, it's fabulous to do it as opposed to not doing it. But in terms of, like, the AL Cy Young voting, Dylan Cease had a better ERA. Alex Manoah had a better ERA, a better whip. Shohei Ohtani had a better ERA, better whip. I have no problem with Framber Valdez being fifth. A lot of people were upset with Framber being fifth. The one that I think got completely overlooked, and I know the reasons why, Javier didn't have enough innings to qualify for all of the average numbers, but he only finished 14 innings away from qualifying for like the ERA championship. If you look at Javier's numbers, Javier would have been, if he qualified, and again, only 14 innings shy of qualifying, he would have been top five in ERA, he would have been third in whip, he would have been second in strikeouts per nine innings. There is no reason in my mind that Christian Javier should not have finished at least on the Cy Young board. He didn't even get one vote from any of these 30 voters who can vote for their top five. Christian Javier deserved a vote more than Kevin Gausman, but I think it's a good thing. I think it's a good thing for the Houston Astros. Not that Javier is going to be pitching mad or anything like that next year, but again, I think people were overlooking him and I think disrespecting him based on the season he just had.
Well, let's see if we can just take, B-Mac, just cut up all the things I said about Yordan and Fromber, and then we'll just insert quotes here on Christian Javier. The only thing I would add that's different than what I said about those two guys in terms of exposure and notoriety and things like that was the fact that Javier also split time between the bullpen as a starting pitcher, and the fact that I know it's just a pitching award, but most people kind of dedicate it towards starting pitchers unless they just had an MVP-type season out of the pen. And you look at it, and I think a lot of writers thought, oh, he started the season and couldn't. And I heard some of the national guys talking about this, saying, you know, he started the season and he wasn't even one of their top six starters. He had to go to the bullpen. No, they chose to put him in the bullpen. They knew what he was. The rest of the nation didn't. And I think that that was kind of the underlying storyline early, was that he wasn't even a starter to start the season. But guess what? When he was a starter, he was dominant. When he was in the playoffs, he was dominant. And that's why, the same way I hope that now Yordan wakes up a lot of people and their eyes are open to who he is based on the postseason, maybe now with Christian Javier, the no-hitter on top of that, and everything that they saw from this guy when they saw him on their television screen on the national stage, will change the narrative going forward.
Yeah, Javier only pitched five games out of the bullpen, though, and four of those were before, like, May 10th. So, like, that's failures on the Riders' part. If they're oh, well, he split time,
but you and
that's
I watch him. You know that. You and I watch him every single night. Yeah. These guys, you know, take a passing glance at box scores every now and then.
Sure.
And then pay attention when something big happens.
Javier got robbed. He's deserving of a Cy Young vote. We were saying that in September. We were saying that before September. I can't wait to see the future Cy Young odds, though, because we'll probably get that closer to spring training. Pitchers and catchers report on Valentine's Day. That might be a ticket I play. That might be a future I play, a little Christian Javier AL Cy Young ticket. Like, who would you say has a better chance to win the Cy Young next year, Javier or Fromber?
Well, I mean, I'm if I think that Javier is a better than a quality replacement for Justin Verlander going forward, I really believe that Javier is a guy that, again, as people are still getting acclimated to him too, but I think he's dominant. And I think that I might put more money on Javier than I would on Fromber.
See, what's interesting about that is Fromber's going to have, you know, the better chance, like in terms of the odds. The odds are going to give Fromber a better chance to win the Cy Young, but it means you might get better value.
I think you get a lot more value,
Because I think it might be 50-50. If you just ask yourself that question, who has a better chance to win the Cy Young, Fromber or Javier, I think it might be 50-50. But the Vegas odds are going to have Fromber in a much more likelier spot because he finished fifth in Cy Young voting this year, and I think he's a more popular name nationally than Christian Javier. Who do you think has a better chance to win the Cy Young next year, Fromber Valdez or Christian Javier? 713-780-ESPN, our HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. When Derek Stingley got drafted to the Texans, concerns about injuries, He's on the injury report this week. How should the Texans handle their rookie, Derek Stingley Jr., ahead of the Commander game on Sunday? It's Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
All right, we'll have a Beezy Money coming up in about 15 minutes, which we were on a roll until I missed, and then all of a sudden, you guys lost. You had a losing week last week.
I've got plenty to say about that.
Was it Paulie's fault?
It was a combo platter between Paulie and Brendan who
I knew it wasn't your fault.
They overruled me. They went completely against what I said the bet should be. They picked their own game. They picked the other team that I said in said game, and then they picked that game to be the biggest game we put money down on. And I said, let the record show when Jeremy comes back. I had nothing to do with this.
I'm not happy about that. I might throw a mouse at Paul Gallant, and I might make fun of Brendan for never working because of it. But we'll be doing that in a few minutes. We'll get you back on the winning track because, I mean, y'all lost, but not a lot of money last week, even though y'all did lose that big bet.
Oh, they tried. Yeah.
I mean, that was a $100 big bet, our biggest bet we've ever made. And the other day when I wanted to bet against the Texans for $100, and Brendan was like, no, we can't do that. And then they easily covered. I wish we would have bet our whole bankroll on it. Thanks a lot, Brendan. Sabotaging Beezy Money. Anyways, Derek Stingley Jr. has landed on the injury report for the Houston Texans. He has a hamstring injury. Look, we have no idea how severe this injury is. It could be minor. It could be, I don't think it's severe because we didn't really see him leave the game with a severe injury. That said, if the dude's 99.9%, I'm not playing him against the Washington football team on Sunday. There is zero incentive to risk Derek Stingley Jr. in that game this weekend.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, this from a different perspective is exactly what we were talking about with Dameon Pierce. The fact is, you know who they are, and you know, especially in the case of Stingley and where they drafted him, how important he's going to be going forward. The last thing you need to do with a guy that has had injuries with his lower body is to put him out there if he's not 100% and risk him getting hurt yet again. And God forbid that he not only gets hurt and it's not a sprained ankle or a pulled hamstring, it turns out to be something more severe because he's favoring something to try and make up for what's going on. I don't do it either. I just think at this point of the season, you know who you are for the rest of the year, and you know you're not going anywhere. The last thing you need to do is risk your future by throwing him out there if he is not 100%.
I'm going to have serious questions if he plays, actually. Like, if you show up on a Thursday injury report as a DNP and you have the hamstring, and we'll get the game designations here in a little bit, and maybe if you want to go item by item with each injury and their game status, maybe Highway to Hell's for you. But we'll talk about Derek Stingley Jr. if we get that information and whether he's questionable, doubtful,
probably. We're not talking nose picking and holiday lights?
No, we're not going to talk to see if the third string defensive tackle could be a factor in Sunday's game for a one-win team and whether or not he's going to play or not. But, I mean, there's no reason for Derek Stingley Jr. to play. Like, he does not need to be playing in this football game. The whole point of his rookie year is to, one, make sure that he develops. That's the most important thing. Development, continued growth as a rookie. But if you have an injury that derails that the rest of the season, look, I'd rather be very, very careful, err on the side of caution, miss one game as opposed to potentially losing him for, like, the last three because he's dinged up. So do not play Derek Stingley Jr. If they do, I'll be doing some serious judging with that entire coaching staff and front office.
Well, I think we are anyway. I think that we should be. And I think that the other thing that I think you got to pay attention to, Jeremy, is progress, right? I mean, normally you see forward progress. You see a guy that goes from not practicing to practicing on a limited basis to getting more into the full swing of things and was a full participant. What you're seeing is a step back on their own reports because I believe Wednesday he was a limited participant. Now Thursday he did not practice at all. And so now you're sitting here on Friday going, he didn't progress. He regressed. He got back to the point where they didn't even decide it was a worthwhile experience to put him back out there on the field for anything. And that's where I said, then don't risk it, right? I mean, if he's telling you that he is not healing and that he is not getting better, then the only thing you could do is make it worse by putting him out there on the field on Sunday. I don't think that that's worth it based on where this team sits and where we are in the NFL season.
Tank Ortiz on our Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN97.5. He says that the Texans should have drafted Sauce Gardner. I don't remember where you are on this. I think that you were kind of 50-50, if I recall. I really don't remember. I wanted Sauce. I wanted Sauce over Stingley. People thought I was crazy for that because, you know, calling me an American Conference homer. But I like Sauce more than Stingley. But I'm going to defend Stingley here because I don't think that you can say that Sauce is a better football player than Stingley. You can say that he's having a better year than Stingley. There's no debate there. Sauce Gardner is having a better rookie season than Derek Stingley Jr. But that is different than the talent, right? The resume is always different than the talent. One thing that hurts Stingley, and look, Stingley's having a fine year. I found this thing on CBS where they're grading every rookie, and they gave Stingley a B, which is fine. It says that in the coverage area, Stingley has yet to allow a touchdown to date, which is good. Stingley's been around the ball quite often. He's been a little bit up and down, some coverage lapses, but it talks about how they're in a soft cover too. So, like, if you just flip Stingley and Sauce Gardner between the Jets running their style of defense and the Texans running their style of defense, we would probably be having the same conversation. Like, what the Texans are doing defensively, playing zone almost more than any other team in the NFL, has put a governor on Derek Stingley Jr. Well, so if you flip the roles, Blankers, and you had Sauce sitting in a cover two, maybe he looks a little bit better than Stingley does with the Texans, but we would also be like, oh, Sauce, he looks kind of boring. It's hard to get a real gauge on who he is.
I mean, you're right in everything that you've said. And the thing that I would say is, when he is 100%, when I put him back out there, I'm going to tell Lovie Smith, if I'm Nick Caserio, at this point in the season, it's time to see who some of these individual players are. It's time to get away from just schemes for the sake of schemes for what you've been doing for your whole career and getting him in more situations where we can see his man-to-man coverage skills and see the things that are the reason why they drafted him where they did. And we're so enamored with him and saw him so many times and you know, we're so secretive about the fact that they had such affection for him. I was on the fence between the two players. My biggest concern was his physicals, yeah. And that really concerned me. You saw Sauce more than I did. I understand the measurables were more for Sauce. But other than that, I told you all season long it was going to be whiteboard material with him on one side, Sauce on the other, and the comparisons were going to fly week to week and by certain milestones in the year, and here we are. And Sauce has really kicked ass and played at a very, very high level. You're right. The governors have been on, and Stingley hasn't been able to show completely what he can do. If he does get back out on the field this year and he does get back to 100%, then you need to see him in some more man. You need to see him in some more situations where you can fully evaluate where he is after his rookie season and how good he could possibly be.
The thing that I've noticed with like Nick Caserio just watching this year play out, and again, we were talking about this during the draft. I've pointed to things that like Lovie Smith has said. Remember we went on with Barstool when he was talking about his most important positions, and he said that he loves a pass rushing yep. defensive tackle. He said basically that cornerback was like the fifth most important position on a defense, and it doesn't add up. So you have Lovie Smith saying that the cornerback in his defense is the fifth most important position, yet you have Nick Caserio drafting a corner with a top three pick. Eno Benjamin is a very, very, very small example of this as well. But whenever I look at Nick Caserio build this team, it really doesn't fit with what the coaching staff wants, particularly Lovie Smith, maybe even Pep Hamilton, because I don't think Pep Hamilton's running this spread that is like really well suited for an Eno Benjamin, who's more of like a scat back, catch the ball out of the backfield. But it's bizarre to me, and maybe it's a tell here, Blankers. Maybe it's a tell of how they feel about Lovie Smith long term, that they're building the long term roster. Whoever you're drafting at number three, you have long term plans for said pick that you're drafting at number three. If you're drafting a dude who's against the scheme fit of the head coach you just hired, might be a pretty good tell that Lovie Smith, maybe whenever we said 3 years as his over-under on how long he was going to be the Houston Texans head coach, maybe we were a little bit over-exaggerating that.
It's possible. It really is. But I think that at a certain point, you know, as much as they've been more on the same page than Cully and Caserio a year earlier, and the fact that, you know, we've seen a little bit more synergy, communication, and even like you said, going back to the draft all the way through the majority of this season, it seems like that, you know, there's not the kind of disconnect that we saw all season a year ago. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that anybody's job is safe for the long term. And we know that with Pep Hamilton in particular, the fact that we can say till we're blue in the face, hey, look, a guy can only call plays that he knows his team can execute. And if he doesn't have the soldiers to carry out the game plan, then yeah. Maybe, you know, it's not on him. Well, at a certain point, then call plays that can get the best out of the players that are on your roster so you can do at least something to be effective, and they don't seem to be able to do that either. I think that a lot of people are going to be having their butts to the fire by the time this season is over because of the way everything has been kind of exposed in terms of what they're not doing, what they're not refusing to consider, how they're game planning. Like you said, I mean, we're not just game planning for week to week. We got to figure out what this team has and these players can do long term. And at a certain point, when you know you only have one win this deep into the season, you ain't playing for playoffs. So play for the future and figure out who are guys that will be playing for you.
Yeah, so I don't think Lovie and Nick Caserio are like contentious at all. I think that they're working together. It's just kind of the players that Nick Caserio has brought in aren't exactly what you would call scheme fits for Lovie Smith. 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Last week on BZ Money, Gallant and Brendan lost you money. Coming up next, Blank and Brandon will make you money. BZ Money with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Do these guys have any idea what they're doing? Probably not. But that won't stop them from making picks. This is BZ Money.
Big voice guy's wrong. We know exactly what we're doing. We know how to make you tons of money. Now, Paulie and Brendan's a different story. If it wasn't for Paulie or Brendan Blankers, we'd have four straight winning weeks.
That's right.
Of BZ Money.
By the way, I just want the record to show, too, that I had both my picks right last week.
I noticed that.
I was vetoed in making one of my picks, betting against the Texans, the big money game of the week by both of those guys. And then I vetoed their big money deal, which they bounced me out of and said, we're doing it anyway, and we're doing it for 100 bones. We would have really been big waiting for you to come back. Then we could have bounced them.
I didn't realize that your side of it, actually. I didn't realize they had all I saw was the three bets that y'all made. And I know they all went 1-2. Or actually, I think y'all went 2-1. But the big money one is the one that cost us money, which I don't like. And Mr. Gow doesn't like it either because it's his money. We started off with $1,000. We're at $785. We've been coming back. Although, thanks to Paulie and Brendan, we lost a little bit. But we're going to get it back this week, and we have some help from BMAC. Brian McDonald, somebody who's willing to work more than part-time like Brendan. Blankers, do you want to get us started with your first game that you want to sell us?
Sure. Let's see. I've got two on the agenda that I was kicking around. Look, I think from a Chicago Bears and Atlanta Falcons position, to me, Atlanta is giving three to the Bears already. Both teams are really successful running the football. Neither team really has all that much success, though, with Drake London and some of the guys that the Falcons have. They might have more weapons than the Bears. I think the Bears are starting to figure it out, and I think Justin Fields is starting to figure it out. And I think if you're giving the Bears three as it is in what might be a pretty evenly picked game, I could see that the Bears are going to win this outright, and that's why I like the 3 points. I like Chicago at Atlanta.
Man, I was actually on the other side of this game. This was a no-better for me on this week. I had the Falcons winning by four. Anything that's within about a couple of points, I don't like to play it. So I didn't play this game. Gun to my head, I would have played the Atlanta side. I like what you say about the Bears. The Bears have been all right. I think the Falcons have been all right, too, though.
They have. They've surprised.
BMAC, we're putting you right into the – we're throwing you right into
the
wolves here. Yeah, you got to kind of break the tie between the Killer Bees.
If I had to pick, I would pick the Chicago side. So right. That's the way I would vote.
I'm not going to stand in y'all's way, but I would like to push for a low-dollar bet. $20 okay? Would y'all push back a whole lot on 20
how
bucks?
Much?
20.
How about this? How we'll pause it. We'll come back at the end if we need it.
We can't do that. Brendan doesn't let us do that.
Well, but Brendan's not here. That's a good thing.
I feel like we should still follow Brendan's orders. Otherwise, he might be mean.
Boy, Geppetto. Way to go, puppet boy.
How much did you want to put on it?
No, I wasn't looking to break the bank on it either.
Let's go 25 then.
That's fine.
All right, $25 Bears plus three. First game that I want to sell you guys is the Minnesota Vikings. Anytime that you have a home dog, that's going to catch my attention in the NFL. Anytime you have a home dog who I think's better than the team that they're playing, I believe Minnesota's better than Dallas. We've heard the theory for years that Dallas always gets a couple of points because they're America's team. They're a popular team. Everybody wants to bet the Dallas Cowboys. Minnesota, in my opinion, is better. If they play on a neutral field, Minnesota wins that football game. They're not playing on a neutral field. They're playing in Minnesota. Minnesota's getting 1.5 points. Give me the Vikings to ride over the Cowboys.
Here's where I am on this one, Jeremy, because I don't necessarily disagree, but I think between the two quarterbacks, I would take Dak over Kirk Cousins. Between the biggest thing that I saw when the Cowboys played the Packers was the Cowboys' defense was exposed for as good as Micah Parsons has been in a team that cannot stop the run, and they really struggled mightily to stop the run. Dalvin Cook is a pretty damn good option when you have a need a running back against a team that cannot stop the run. I think for those reasons alone, I think Minnesota is a better football team than the Dallas Cowboys. So I could lean your direction on this one. I don't know what BMAC thinks.
All right, BMAC, how you feeling?
I'm going with you on this one.
Yes!
How much?
This sounds pretty unanimous here. I think we should go 50, right?
50? Oh, wow, I see.
I don't know about 50.
I don't know about 50 either. I think it's going to be a good game.
35 or 40, y'all name it.
I would say 35.
35.
You are soft. All right, BMAC, what is yours?
My first one, I'm going with really two home favorites here. Small home favorites, but home favorites. First one is New Orleans at home against the Rams. The Rams, obviously, without Cooper Kupp, they lost two more offensive linemen off an offensive line that was already trash. Stafford, obviously, coming off the concussion, missing last week. I just don't think the Rams can pass protect in the dome against New Orleans, and I think like New Orleans to win this by at least four or more and cover the minus three.
Jeremy, Stafford's playing.
Uh-huh.
I know the Rams seem to be folding up their tents and getting ready to go home. You've got Cam Akers basically non-existent because he wanted to
be
traded.
They have no running game at all.
Yeah, so their running game has been limited. Cooper Kupp makes their offensive, their pass catching, even with Allen Robinson, limited. As BMAC mentioned, the offensive line, limited. The defense doesn't seem to be nearly what they were a year ago. However, no matter who you insert name in as quarterback for the New Orleans Saints, that's a problem.
Yeah, Andy Dalton's a problem in this scenario, but I just think the Rams are falling apart, especially losing those two offensive linemen. They're bottom five in sacks allowed, sack percentage allowed. I just don't think they could protect against the New Orleans Saints front, and they're going to get beat up along the line.
I like the Saints side of this play, too. I hesitate to spend big money on the Saints because I don't really love the
Saints.
It's
like, who wants the game more? I'm with you guys on the Saints.
But, in New Orleans.
Yeah, but in New Orleans, in front of the home crowd, I know they want to win.
I think they'll be more inspired. The Rams know this season.
I'm on the Saints on this one, too. I think that the Saints are the right now, I think they're better than the Rams. The fact they're at home, too. And you lose a couple of offensive linemen. That's tough. Real tough.
How much, Saints fans?
Well, it sounds like I don't want to bet too much on the Saints. I really
30?
Don't. That sounds fine to me.
That's
okay
fine.
With that one, Blakers?
That's fine.
Yeah,
yep.
I don't want to put too much money in my, you know, the Saints coffers here, but I'm good with 30. What's your second game, Blakers?
The second game is right here in the wheelhouse. Ooh. Oh, did I use that? Of the Houston market. I'm going to bet against the Texans again. I mean, the 16th consecutive week that the Texans are going to be an underdog. It's the longest streak in the NFL. It's the second longest streak in franchise history. And the fact is there's no reason not to bet against the Texans. And the fact that the Commanders are 3-1 since Heinicke took over, he's still quarterbacking this team no matter if Wentz is healthy or not. It's only a 3-point spread. They're getting Chase Young back, even if it's on a limited basis. I just think that the Commanders right now have got momentum. They've got a quarterback that is, again, better than the quarterback the Texans have. They've got a running game by committee that's good enough. They've got Terry McLaurin and guys that can catch the football, and their defense is getting better. I like the Commanders to win by more than 3 points.
Yeah, this is kind of, I feel like, an interesting game because I hate betting on teams that just came off a big victory. And the football team just had a big victory over Philly. But I also, I'm not going to stand in the way of anybody wanting to bet against the Houston Texans. So I'm good with it. I wouldn't want to put a lot of money on it. Where you at, BMAC?
Yeah, I'm the same way. I would feel a little hesitant for the reason you mentioned coming off the big win, maybe a letdown. But it's the Texans, and any team with a solid running game playing against the Texans is going to cruise. So I would go with the Washington side as well.
How much y'all want to put on this?
25.
25 sounds right.
Ooh. I thought y'all were going to go a little bit more than that.
Well, you said you didn't feel great about it.
Yeah,
sell me on it if you want to go higher.
Well, I mean, it was your game to sell. Let's go 35.
Did I not sell it enough for you guys to be on board with me on who's going to win?
I just didn't want to go like 50, but I wanted to go more than 25.
I'm okay with 35.
All right, let's go 35 bucks. 35 bucks on the football team, given the 3 points. Second game that I want to sell to you guys, I love Jeff Saturday. I love the Colts. Look, the Commanders and the Texans have kind of exposed the Eagles a little bit, running it right down their throats. And you know the Eagles are worried about this because they've signed a couple of defensive tackles this week. They signed Sue yesterday. I don't know if he's going to play. And of those three teams, Commanders, Texans, the last couple of weeks, who has the best running back? It's Jonathan Taylor. Look, I don't think the Colts are going to win this game, but they're getting 7 points at home against a defense that is suddenly exposed to the rushing attack. And the Colts have Jonathan Taylor. The Colts are covering the 7 points in Indy this week.
I don't like it, Jeremy. I really don't. I think the Eagles don't like the fact that the streak is over, don't like the fact that people are pointing fingers and talking about the fact that they might be more pretenders than contenders, and they might have some weaknesses. I think they obviously went out, like you said, and tried to solidify at least one of those. But I think they're going to be looking to make a statement and basically say, not so fast, all you people that were basically saying that Minnesota was now as good or better of a football team than we are. And I think that they put their foot down. They put it down on the throat of the Colts. And I think they win by double digits.
Be back.
I'm going to have to side with Jeremy on this one. I think the Eagles win this one, and I don't think they necessarily sweat out the end. But I think seven's a big number for a team in Indy who has Jonathan Taylor healthy. They're at home. I think they're able to keep this one a little bit closer than the number would suggest.
Now, Blankers, I don't want to Polly and Brendan you, so we'll go low dollar on this one for your sake. $20, $25, you call it.
That's fine. Whatever you guys want. Look, I'm not going to also stand in your way. It's not if we're not going big dollars. If it's whoever the majority goes for. If you guys feel strongly about it, how strongly?
All right, we'll just go $20. I don't want to be wrong, and then you had that over me all Thanksgiving week. All right, B-Mac, what's your final game?
Last one is kind of a shot at the guy I'm replacing today. I think the Giants win by more than three at home against Detroit. The Lions, last time they went up to the Northeast, lost 29-0 to the Patriots. I don't think they're a team that travels well out in the elements. The Giants still being disrespected, I think, even though they've got that great record. Saquon Barkley against the Lions defense, I mean, if you have him in fantasy, go ahead and count your W because he's going to run for 125 plus on this team. I just think the Giants defense is better than they've been given credit for. They're at home. The Lions don't travel well. They're the worst team in football as far as yards allowed per play. I think the Giants cruise here and win by at least five or six.
Go ahead, Blankers.
Here's what worries me, Jeremy. Almost all of the Giants games this year have been one score victories.
Exactly.
Right? So that concerns me. I think the Giants are going to win this football game, but I don't feel really confident in it because of the fact that they constantly are playing in tight, one-score games, and three is a one-score game that could be exactly how we sit at the end of this thing. So I'll see what you say, but I'm not feeling super confident in this one.
This is one that I know played for myself individually this weekend, but it's one that if I had to go, I would go with the Giants. I agree with you, though, about every game that they've played and it's been close. That's their style of football. Like, it's low scoring. They muck it up. Time control. They don't score in a hurry. Rely on defense a little bit, which isn't great whenever they're giving up points in a game. But I also agree with BMAC. Look, the Lions have a very soft defense. They're going to get exposed through the run. They don't travel all that well. So I like playing the Giants. I would just like to keep it around $20.
I can go with that. I think the Giants will win the football game. I think $20. I mean, let's factor in weather, too, because the Lions playing indoors against a Giants team that's getting kind of used to the elements, that might go in their favor. So I like the Giants. So if you guys call it, if you want to go 20, that's cool.
We just bet all six games. The Bears plus three, $25. We're on the Vikings plus 1.5 for 35. Saints minus 3 for 30. The football team minus 3 against the Texans for 35. Colts getting 7 for 20. And the Giants getting giving a field goal for $20. BZ Money, we're making you money, and we're hoping to get Mr. Gow's money back as well. Where do we go right? Where do we go wrong? 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Apparently, they're not going to have beer at the World Cup. What is something you can't do without whenever you go to a sporting event? 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
World Cup kicks off in 2 days, and FIFA and Qatar have announced that they're not going to have alcohol during the World Cup. 2 days before the biggest soccer tournament in the world kicks off, no beer sales. The funny thing about this, Blankers, there's a lot of funny things about this, Blankers, but Budweiser, $75 million sponsorship deal between FIFA, between Budweiser. Budweiser tweeted something out when they saw this news. Now, they have since deleted this tweet, but whoever was running the social media account for Budweiser whenever it was announced, well, this is awkward. How do you ban alcohol sales 2 days before the World Cup kicks off in stadiums that are going to be filled to capacity?
Evidently, they've received more than enough payments to make more than enough money that they don't feel like this is necessary, and they need to keep that, whatever kind of reign you want to talk about they have over all of their people, because this is just ridiculous. I mean, we've seen this all over the world with soccer games and how much people like to indulge in a few adult beverages while they watch their favorite sport. This isn't a college. Even college games are now serving beer, right? Yeah. I mean, we all have kind of evolved to the point where we realize that you should, be mature, responsible adults. You can drink and watch sporting events. I don't understand it. Did you see, too, that there was the reporter, I want to say from, like, Belgium, doing a live shot, and the authorities came over and said, you're not supposed to be shooting here, and they're like, we're from, Belgium, and we're doing this pre-World Cup, and the reporter basically tried to say, we're supposed to be allowed to be here, and they went, yeah, that's all fine and dandy, and then they beat the crap out of the camera.
The camera had to get got. The camera should have been there. So the camera's got to get got. Hey, if you could go to the wrong spots at certain times, you know that it's possible to get got. And look, they got
Stop
the camera
there.
Got.
Give me that quote again, Jeremy. If you go to the wrong places at the wrong times, like a World Cup in Qatar, that might be the wrong place at the wrong time.
So what is something you can't do without at a game, though, because like obviously for a lot of people beer is one of those things, and now you're not going to get beer at any of the 8 stadiums that are hosting World Cup games. What are some of the things that you can't do without at a game?
I give you the first one.
780-3776.
First one right off the top is fresh made popcorn.
Really?
I mean, Astros games for sure, just like movies, man, that fresh popped popcorn is like number one on my list. Like to watch a baseball game, watch a movie, watch any kind of sporting event.
Yeah.
Popcorn is all world. Like at Minute Maid, I got ticked off because it used to be right at the top of the first section, a little bit off of home plate. And it was the fresh pop popcorn. And they needed that space for something. And they put it in the upper deck. And it pissed me off. But I found a way to make sure that I always get up to the second deck so I can get the fresh pop popcorn. That's a must for me.
Flimsy says, without alcohol, I can't watch soccer. I'll still be watching, obviously. I mean, I won't be there, so I can have a drink. But I'm like one of those rare breeds that doesn't need anything whenever I go to a game. Going to a movie, though, is different, because I would agree with you. Going to a movie, and if I don't have popcorn, like, the movie's a lot less entertaining for me. So popcorn's pretty high on that list. 713-780-3776. What are things that you cannot... like you have to have whenever you go to a sporting event? ABC Eric, I absolutely cannot watch the Astros unless I have at least two glizzies, which, of course, are hot dogs. And he says, what up, Blank and Branham? I think that's high for a lot of people. I think a lot of people go to games and they have to have hot dogs as well.
Well, I think that's why Tuesdays are so popular at the ballpark, because of the fact that there's a lot of people that feel that way too. And the Astros know that people feel that way. They got smart and made sure they capitalized on it. I mean, from my perspective, I'm not, and again, because I grew up in Wisconsin and I know what goes into a hot dog, I'm a little bit more hesitant in terms of my hot dog consumption, but I'm kind of with you. Like, I don't have
to. Hold on a second. You're not going to have a hot dog, but you're going to have that 10-year-old popcorn?
No, it's not 10-year-old. That's what I'm saying. It has to be the fresh popped. I watch it being popped right in front of me, and I make sure I get the hot, fresh popcorn. That's the key.
The butter's totally healthy. There's nothing wrong with the butter.
Did you ask me what I'm putting on it? I didn't say I'm dousing it in butter either.
Well, I mean, they pop it with butter.
A little bit, yeah, and that's all I need. It's perfectly seasoned the way it is, and I can eat the whole bucket, and I enjoy myself.
My number one ballpark food is nachos.
I was going to say, why does this guy pull nachos or something?
I would go nachos over hot dogs. You disagree?
Maybe nachos over hot dogs, but overall, as your number one choice, when that's not even real cheese, and they always use it. Talk about
nothing
stale popcorn.
Nothing is real at a ballpark.
That's the biggest problem, because the cheese they give you is just the nasty cheese out of a can that they heat
and
up.
And they skimp it. You normally don't get enough of it.
Cheese is fantastic.
And then the freaking chips, those little circular chips, are like...
they're tear rounds.
They're kind of like, you can bend them like a waffle because they're kind of stale. I'm totally against nachos at a ball game.
Give me nachos as my number one food, and then a cold beer is my number one drink. Those are the two things at the top of my list. Now, I can get through a game without either one.
Me too.
But if I'm going to have a food, if I'm going to have a beverage, it's nachos, preferably with chili and cheese. Got to have a little bit of jalapenos in there as well. And then a cold beer. Yeah, I mean, it's ballpark food. What are you expecting? You expecting, like, healthy living and clean living? No.
I know you're throwing some jalapenos on there, and you're having yourself
jalapenos
a fiesta.
Are great. Maybe you, but my stomach is like a, what is it? It's like
a steel trap.
I'm a tank. Yeah, it's a steel trap. I'm a tank. I can handle anything.
Look, for me, it's always been a big Coke and a big thing of popcorn. Yeah. And I'm with you. I don't have to have anything, especially if you're working the game. But if I'm there to enjoy, especially a baseball game outside on a beautiful night, I want just a big, fresh thing of popcorn and a Coke, and I'm great.
You hit on mine. Nothing worse, and this goes for restaurants as well, but when you go up and try to order the Coke or the Coke Zero, and they ask you if Pepsi's going to be okay.
Yeah, no, it's not.
No, it's not. So if I'm at a ball game and they tell me, oh, we have Pepsi, that's a big problem for me.
Y'all don't like Pepsi?
I can't stand it compared to Coke.
It's passable, but it's just not in the same ballpark, pardon the pun.
I mean, I'm a Coke guy over a Pepsi guy, but I can do a Pepsi. But usually I'll just flip to like a Dr. Pepper if that's the case. Like if they don't have Coke, okay, Dr. Pepper it is. Mega Blast says nacho cheese at a ballpark is terrible. Flimsy says a lot of food at Minute Maid Park sucks. Mega Blast says at baseball games it's hot dogs and peanuts. See, I think peanuts would be a pretty popular answer.
I think peanuts is a great answer as well, yes. But again, if you can get them like – obviously, everybody does it in the bag now, but there are some ballparks that do the paper bag with the freshly roasted peanuts. Those are awesome, too. But, I mean, if that's asking too much, these ballparks are trying to have more, like, delicacy-type foods now and raise their ability to serve things that you like, aside from grasshoppers. If you can get the fresh roasted peanuts, they're awesome, too. But I totally think peanuts is up there for baseball.
This might be a hot take. Whenever I go to the ballpark, I want to eat junk food. I want to eat food that's just absolutely
the hot pretzel.
Yeah, the hot pretzel's a good call. Which, by the way, I had. What's that pretzel place you always talk about?
Which one?
The Wetzel's Pretzels.
Oh, Wetzel's Pretzels.
I had that for the first time the other day because I've always been an Auntie Annie guy.
Yeah,
Wetzel's Pretzels are unbelievable.
Oh. You don't tell
life changer.
The blank girls. If we're at the mall. Doesn't matter where Dad wants to go. Just make sure the girls get their Wetzel's pretzels and all is good in the world.
Oh, man. So good. Which, by the way, I spent like 3 minutes today looking up how to pronounce Qatar, which we're all wrong, by the
Lisa
way.
Lisa always corrects me. She calls it Cutter.
It's not Cutter. She's wrong.
Good.
She's wrong.
Oh, let me tell her that.
No, she's wrong. It's none of us can say it because it's like a very specific enunciation that is specific to that country. So, like, none of us know how to say it.
Oh, you just made my weekend. I get Cutter, to tell though. Her that she's wrong.
The guy that's native to the country said if it's anything, it's Qatar. So, not Cutter. All right, that's it for us. Thanks to BMAC for filling in for the part-timer, Brendan Riley. He's Blank. I'm Branham. Have a great weekend, Houston. We'll talk to you on Monday. The Wheelhouse is next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.